Welcome to Singer Leeweck's podcast series, brought to you by the professionals of Singer Leeweck from various areas of expertise. Our podcast series touch upon different subjects related to growth, strategy, tax advisory services, and technical and regulatory matters. Hi, Craig. How are you?
Good.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Welcome to the Singer Leeweck podcast. We're happy to have you today, and today we're going to talk about the life cycle of an entrepreneur. As we all know, entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial people are very unique individuals. It takes a certain type of person to not only come up with an idea, but also launch it, right? Two different things, when you start with something and when you grow it. So I know that you specifically work with a lot of family-owned businesses and entrepreneurs at Singer Leeweck. Can you take us through the life cycle of a business that goes from point A to point C?
Sure. The typical lifestyle of an entrepreneurial business owner is, in the very beginning, they come up with an idea. They don't map usually anything down in a plan. So they just take an idea and they run with it. Most of the time, the financing is done through families and friends. It's a way to get started. And it's literally living hand to mouth each time as the business continues to grow. And that's the way most business owners actually got started in the business. Because if they had really thought about it, sat down, did a plan, figured out how much money they needed, they would never have gotten in business to begin with. So that's the beauty of sometimes not knowing what you don't know, and you just go ahead and do it. And one of the things I do tell anybody that initially starts to do a business plan when they open a business is it always takes double the money and twice as long as you ever figure to go ahead and get it started. Now, let's say the business starts to grow for a while, starts to get something underneath it. And when the business is small, you can trip, and a trip usually doesn't cost you a whole lot. But as you get bigger and bigger, then if you trip, it starts to cost you more and more, and you have more assets at risk. So what an entrepreneur has to do is keep that fire in the belly to continue to grow, but start to then be in control of that growth. And what entrepreneurs have to do is start to come up with, in my idea, a profit plan, which is basically projections to be able to figure out how fast they can grow. Because believe it or not, many businesses fail not just because they run out of money or they're operating ineffectively, but also because when they grow so fast, they outgrow their capacity to fund it. And before they know it, they're upside down. And they had a terrific idea, but they didn't have the financial support to continue to grow.
So that's very interesting, Craig. What advice would you give to a business that is actually there now? They launched their idea. They've picked up some traction in the marketplace, but now they don't know where to go next.
Well, I was just talking with a client of mine this morning that I just came from, and one of the things they've had a business that's been around for quite a while. They're in the construction business, and as we all know, construction can ebb and flow depending on what's happening. Right now, there's a little compression in some of the margins. So what I worked with them this morning to do with the three owners, as well as the next generation who happened to be sitting in the room, was to start to take a look already at next year. We already know that's the beauty of construction. You know what your jobs in progress is. So you have somewhat a really good feel what your revenue is going to be. Based on that, we're able to figure out what our margin should be on those jobs. And then we're comparing it to what our overhead is going to be to run the business. And shockingly, when we ran those numbers, we found out we were going to be upside down. So we had to have a really frank discussion in front of everybody, the whole family and both generations, about, look, at what do we do? And one of the things you first of all look at is, how can I grow revenue? And by growing revenue, we had to figure out what types of jobs we could take. And again, if you're in a product business, just substitute products and regions and so on. But they had to figure out what types of jobs they should go after, how to bid those more correctly to raise their margins on the jobs, and then how much of that extra business would go ahead to fund the deficit we're having. And at the same time, then look at your costs. Look at how much you're spending this year versus how much you spent last year, and then where could the reductions be? And it was interesting, as I went around the room and was talking about how do we grow the business, and I was asking, is everybody doing everything they can to be out there to grow the business? The second generation was sitting there shaking their heads no. That they knew they had to be doing things different. They had to spend more time in marketing. They had to get out and start doing relationship building that had sort of fallen in the cracks over the last couple of years. And then when it came to cuts, and I was sitting with the first generation in the business, they were saying, you know, we got some people here who were paying for 5 days, but they could do their jobs in three or four, and we really need to be making some cuts. Or we've had people who have worked here a long time and have their kids in the business who aren't performing, but we've been too nice not to tell them that your sons or daughters can no longer work for us. So the instruction is over the next 3 weeks, they're going to come up, have a mini retreat. I recommend this for everybody. Take 3 or 4 hours, bring the key people together, and sit down and just work on 2 or 3 items. And that's what we told them to do. How are we going to raise revenue? How are we going to reduce costs? And then let's put it together and see where we're going to be at the end of the year.
That's clever. But what would you suggest to a struggling business or growing business or a business that's reached that threshold where they don't have someone giving them this advice? Because this can actually make or break someone. So what advice would you give to a growing business to get some of these advisors, someone like you or even, you know, another trusted advisor to help them see things as they are? Because not everyone obviously can see this right away.
Well, you have a couple sorts of advisors. First of all, you have the ones you're already paying. And so that's going to be your accountant. That's going to be your lawyer. That, in a way, is your banker because you're paying them through some interest. That could be your insurance people. So people are making money off of you. You should be going to them and using them as resources. What do you see in other types of similar businesses that would pertain to mine? What recommendations do you have for me? Because if all you have is professional advisors who answer your questions and move on, they're not being of value to you. What a true valuable professional does for you is brings together those items. Right? Once you get done with your professionals, then I recommend that what a lot of companies like to do is get an advisory board. The difference between an advisory board and a statutory board is statutory board can control what's happening. Entrepreneurs will have nothing to do with that type of board. I own the company. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. So you create an advisory board. There you just bring them in and you listen to their thoughts. And they can come in and help you in areas that maybe your accountants and your lawyers and your banker and other people cannot do. Let's say you're having an operation problem. You're running a $10 million company, but you want to get it to $30 million. You can bring in somebody who has already had the experience of running a $30 million operation in your industry and have them do it. Maybe you need to expand in R&D, research and development. You need to come up with new products. Maybe you bring in one member on your advisory board who can help you build those products. Many clients have scientific boards, research and development boards. Maybe you're going to open up a new area, new geographical area. Maybe somebody you want on your advisory board is somebody who's operated in that area. So if you're in Southern California, you want to open up in Northern California, who can give you the lay of the land and tell you how to do it? Or it can introduce you to some customers that you just don't have the contacts into yet. So you don't have to have a big board. It can initially just be one person or two people. And believe it or not, people say that's expensive, but there's a lot of people that want to give back to struggling entrepreneurs because they were there once and they're willing to go ahead and give you that time.
And that is truly key. I mean, that's great advice because there are a lot of also retired executives that actually do this just for fun. There's a lot of resources out there where retired executives take on, you know, the startups and guide them through whatever phase.
But be careful that you choose the right advisory board members, because if you're in a family-owned business, for instance, and you want to keep it family-owned, you don't want to get somebody on the advisory board who gets their kicks out of selling companies. If you don't want to sell your company, you don't want to get somebody on your advisory board who's going to gear you to nothing about selling your company. So, again, it's finding the right people who understand what you want to do. Conversely, if you do want to sell your company, you want to get somebody on your advisory board who has sold their companies maybe many times over so they can help you over the next 2, 3, 4 years get ready, get your company packaged to sell and maximize your value, tell you what you have to do starting today over the next 3 or 4 years to maximize the value. So, again, it's matching of those things, and that's where a good CPA, for instance, I do that for a lot of clients, can help bring those people together that and introduce you to the right people.
So that's excellent advice, Craig. But what would you say to someone that says, gosh, my company's not big enough, I can't do this? Are there any thresholds? Would you recommend this to a startup? Can anyone do this, or do you have to be a certain size?
You know, I look at when an entrepreneur starts their business, they look at the stars and say, that's what I want to become. So usually when you start thinking, I can't afford this or I don't want to do this, that really means you probably desperately need to be doing it. And there are people that will work with startups initially. And then I have a client who's changed out their advisory board three times as their companies continue to grow. Their first advisory board was perfect for where they were when they were small. They achieved their goals with that advisory board. Then they came up with new problems or new insight that they needed. So they said thank you very much to one advisory board and created a second one that would help them take them to the next level. And now that they've achieved that level, I just got the call from the client. He's changing out his board again because now he wants to get to the next level. So there are people willing to help you at each step along the way.
So every stage is never too early. You just have to find the right people.
Correct.
Well, thank you so much for your insights, Craig. I think this is quite valuable for family-owned businesses, for entrepreneurs, even for startups. And we look forward to having you back for our Growing Through Acquisitions podcast. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.